This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Welcome. Special welcome to Chris Edwards, Jane Britt and Martin Stewart for joining us. Really appreciate your time to give us some updates on rideshare, I would call it. But there's Chris, will talk about the program with Uber. And Jane and Martin will just give us an update on BCA's work around these issues. So instead, in the interest of time, Erica, could you just read out the participant list, and then if we've got anyone on a phone that you can't recognise, we can ask them to say hello.
We've got myself, Erica Webb. I'm in Perth and I'm on Noongar land. We've got Greg Madsen. He's listed here as Dog Guide Handlers. We've got a phone number that I'm not really sure. I think it's Joyce Jones. Ends in 6019.
Oh, that's right. Am I muted or unmuted?
No, we got you, Joyce, and I did recognise your phone number in the end, so hello, Joyce.
All right. Okay.
We got Kevin Murphy. We've got Ros Matthews. We've got Ros Fitzel. We got Chelsea Bartlett. We've got Ilona Trust. We've got Deborah. We've got Karen Passmore. We've got Nina Smith from Travel Paws. We've got Ashley Brooks. We got Bronwyn Drew. We've got Chris Edwards from Vision Australia. We've got Claudia Stevenson. We've got Fernanda. We've got Francois Jacobs. We've got Jamie Kelly. We've got Jane Britt from Blind Citizens Australia. We've got John Hardy. We've got Kirsten Busby. We've got Martin Stewart from Blind Citizens Australia. We've got Scott Erickson and we've got Stacey Hipwell. Hello and welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Erica. And Angela's just joined and you're letting in Annette in, are you, Greg?
Yep.
Cool.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, so we'll get started. Chris, welcome, Chris. National Government Manager, Government Relations Manager from Vision Australia, who will give us an update on the Uber SAP. I don't even know what that stands for. Sorry. Chris, you can do it. Okay, over to you.
Neither do I, but but thank you very much. And it's great being here. Just for people that don't know me, I'm Charles Chris Edwards. I manage our government relations, policy and advocacy and NDIS and aged care leads for Vision Australia. A proud seeing eye dog user myself. And I've got a new dog only about sort of 6 months ago, Eva. Very happy to be here today. Thank you. The last time I was invited, but unfortunately I had an engagement that I just couldn't get out of, and Susan Thompson presented on my behalf. But we talked about the Uber initiative that Vision Australia has been very closely working with Uber on, and so I don't know, Kevin, how much detail you want me to actually go into that, but clearly it was about what we were seeing as seeing eye dog and guide dog users is that we were getting an unacceptable number of refusals, debates with drivers to let them in, and it was a great concern to our clients, to other guide dog users, and to the organisation in general. And so, and this has not been a new thing for Uber, this hasn't been a new thing for taxis. And I think that Jane and Martin will talk to you about some of the work that we're doing as well with BCA and others on taxis and in New South Wales and with the taxi companies. With Uber, I think the thing that really sort of brought it to head was probably Victoria. So one of the things that Vision Australia has been lobbying for many years is the ability to be able to use the taxi subsidy program called the multi-purpose taxi program with rideshare. And we thought that was important because, you know, people that are blind have the choice of using taxis or rideshare. And sometimes, you know, we know that it's more convenient to use rideshare. And so I think that with that availability, people decided to move some of their or all of their point-to-point transport from taxis to Uber. And those of us that have dogs, you know, had mixed experiences. So, you know, and so we've raised this over time, but, you know, obviously more importantly after the availability of Ubers with Uber. And I think the positive thing is that Uber were very keen on listening and understanding. And you know, whilst I'd like to say that that's happened all the time with taxis and the taxi companies, they've always sort of been open to listening and look like listening, but actually, you know, would always come down to, you know, oh, we need to get the drivers more training, etc., and that'll solve all the problems. And we know that, you know, that's not the case, or else we wouldn't be talking about, you know, issues of access with dogs in taxis and Ubers now. So they took very much a business approach to it, and the advantage that they have is that they are a technology company. So the thing that drive technology companies is data. So, you know, they've got very good data on, you know, everything from knowing where the cabs were, how long they paused, when someone was picking up, yeah, when they refused, all those sorts of things that, yeah, and taxis are certainly getting much more like that too now. But, you know, I think that helps them come up with solutions. So we worked with them very closely on not only sort of articulating the problem, which was that, you know, the drivers weren't aware of the law, and they and a number of things that sort of created barriers. And so they came up with, and this is an Australian first, a world first thing in Australia, to come up with an option where people could opt in. And that was really important because, you know, people, not everybody wants to opt in, but there's an opportunity to opt in, and that would identify to the driver in advance that you're getting picked up, the person you're picking up has a seeing eye dog, and that yeah, you reminder that the law that is the law, and yeah, you're required to do so. Now, it hasn't been going that long. I think what it's probably been close to 6 months. And, you know, I'll be really interested in hearing people's feedback. But, you know, my anecdotal feedback and my personal experience, it's improved it sometimes. But, yeah, we're still getting, a number of refusals. And so when I've been talking to Uber about that, there's been a number of issues. One is that they did have a bit of a technology issue where when people signed up to this, because the app's been software is engineered within America, what they identified is that even though some people had signed up to it and it had been put on their account, it wasn't triggering the messages for some drivers. So they identified that, and I believe that that's been fixed. The other issue is that, there's also, again, some technology issues, is that it sends a message to the first driver, but after the first driver refuses, The second driver at this point is a message, and that's a technology issue as well that they're certainly trying to resolve. And so that sort of explains why. And I think that the third issue that I see is that one of the challenges of being an Uber driver is that you get a number of messages around, you know, different issues, so not just about dogs, and it's sort of getting the attention of the driver so that they actually look at that message and read it rather than just go, oh, here's another message from Uber. And that is one. And then the other thing that was part of this new program was a number, or, you know, through the app, a number that you could call to get more immediate assistance. And certainly the feedback that we've provided Uber is that those people, which are more based overseas, so the I'll come back to the other people that you talked to, but the initial people, really in the experience that we've been fed back from our clients and from my personal experience, it hasn't been particularly successful, that component of it. The people, whilst they're, you know, well-meaning and helpful, that it really wasn't a huge support when you did have a refusal. On the other hand, the follow-up of Uber around when you do have a refusal, in our experience from people, has been generally excellent. There, you know, you put in the app, there's, yeah, one of the particular options within the app is literally assistance dog refusal. You do that, you fill in a very basic form, and somebody is back to you very, very quickly on message. And then not shortly after, somebody talks that through with you and explains, you know, what they're going to do. And, you know, Uber have very clearly got two strikes in your app policy. The first strike, when you refuse someone, you need to do an online training module. Second strike is that you're no longer allowed to use the app. So the other thing that we talk about at Visual Australia, it's still, you know, particularly in Victoria, it's really still important to report it to the regulator. I still call them Commercial Passengers Victoria, which used to be the Taxi Directorate, that just changed its name about a month ago, and I can't sorry recall what it's called. But they're very, it's very important that we continue to report dog refusals both to the company and to the commercial thing, because the Commercial Passenger Vehicles, the regulator, we'll follow it up if there's appropriate evidence, and yeah, we'll find the individuals. And I think that we keep doing that because, you know, the hip pocket really does sort of make an impact on people to share that news and change behaviour.
So, Chris, sorry, it's Kevin. Just to clarify, so number one, the when you opt in. So if people who have opted in and are still, the message isn't going out to drivers, that's my experience, they're saying they're not getting it, do we have to redo it?
No, they've been aware of some people where it hasn't worked. They're doing a review of that. It's some sort of software glitch in Infoamerica. So it has been working for some people, but not for others. But they're following that through. They know clearly who has opted in, and they're doing what they can on the system's end to ensure that message does get through. And so I think I've done the same as asked, did you get the message? And I'm getting still a mixed response around that, even though I know that I am opted in and it does happen sometimes, but I'm still not 100% sure whether it's the Uber driver not recognising they've got
recording in progress
or not.
Yeah, yeah, that's the same as mine. Okay, and just the second one quickly, and you can go on, is the number that you know was having problems with the overseas responses, has that been fixed?
So the call centre, yeah, so when you click on the speak to a assistance, I can't remember the exact button that it is within the app. You know, my experience, it goes to, you know, like a call centre in somewhere like the Philippines or somewhere like that, and they're very polite and they're very helpful. The feedback is that they are going to do, yeah, they've lodged that as an issue. They've committed to do some more training, but I imagine that, you know, that will, yeah, these things don't happen absolutely overnight. And I had a meeting, my last meeting with Uber was probably about a month ago. The other thing that they are looking at implementing is whilst we've opted into the program, there's sometimes you get an Uber where you don't have the dog, and they're looking at trying to build into the app sort of like, I'm not traveling with a dog this time type a checkbox on the booking. So that, you know, you can sort of opt out to say that I'm not taking a dog this time. So that you know, that message doesn't get, so, you know, I know that sometimes if I'm going out with, you know, my partner or someone, I might leave the dog at home, and but, you know, that is what we are seeing is probably finally just what we are seeing is that there are a number of Uber drivers that do decline the job. It's hard to always know whether that was because they notified the message or whether some other legitimate reason. I'm assured that, they're looking at regular reports of those drivers and where they believe that it was, you know, due to the notification. So, you know, where that was, yeah, you know, they could see it was sort of more of a direct response to the notification than something else. They are counselling those drivers.
All right. Claudia has her hand up.
Yep, just a sec. So look,
one final thing. So the two intentions of it was, is to obviously, the ultimate thing is to stop, to have drivers so they don't refuse dogs. But one of the things that it has been doing is that there's less of that debate when the Uber driver does pull up and you're trying to explain it. So that, you know, I think that the people that that have been engaged with Vision Australia is that we're seeing quite a reasonably high number of those people that are declining the job on the app, whether it's getting reissued, but seeing less sort of refusals when they get there, and less debates about you have to take me, etc. And part of what I'm wanting to do today is to understand, you know, other people's experiences if they have been getting Ubers, and any other issues with taxis too, because we're certainly in constant contact with taxi companies and the Taxi Council of New South Wales.
Great, Chris. Thanks very much. So I'll just explain how we'll do the questions and comments. So in terms of particularly with Chris's presentation on the Uber, the SAP program, I'll welcome questions now. And Claudia, thank you for doing a demo. It would be good if you want to ask a question or make a comment that you put your hand up. So Alt-Y on the computer or *9 on the mobile. But if you can't do that, just say your name, and we'll get you in the queue as well. But we'll take, say, 10 minutes of questions now, if we need that, around Chris's presentation, and then we'll go to Jane and Martin. And then after them, we can actually get some specific questions for them, but have a good block of time to have general discussion about the whole rideshare issue. So hopefully that'll cover all issues from participants?
We've got five hands up at the moment.
Great. Okay. Well, let's start by going to them. Claudia, I think, was the first one. So, Erica, if you could just manage that and just go through the list, et cetera. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. It's Claudia here. My experience is not the same. I'm still getting people turning up and driving off. And there's still a huge discrepancy with drivers actually understanding about assistance dogs. They still say you need to take Uber Pet, they don't have to carry you. The other thing that I've tried to do is request information, because I've got a very low rating. I think someone's given me like a one star or something like that. And, you know, that can be really important as well. So I've requested information, you know, you can request your privacy details through the app, and I haven't heard back from Uber yet. But I'm also interested to be able to compare the number of times that I've taken an Uber with the number of times that I've been refused, because for a little while there, I did think it was getting better, and then, but I don't actually think it had anything to do with the SAP program. But yeah, I'm just waiting for a bit more detail about that, but I haven't heard back, so I've got to chase them up again.
I don't know exactly, but it'll be two ingredients put together to make the
time. Could people please remain unmuted until your name's mentioned?
And if you remember that surface that was in the Hakonda by hand, that was...
Someone is unmuted.
Harry.
It's Harry Evans. Harry Evans is... now he's muted.
Thanks a lot, Harry. Okay, continue.
Thanks, Claudia. It is something that we have one of the things is about ratings. Was one of the issues that we raised with Uber. They understand that could be an issue, and actually did say that they were going to look into that, for particular cases. And so I'm certainly happy to not sort of advocate for everybody that, you know, about everybody's particular issues with Uber, but in my general discussions with Uber, I'm certainly happy to support, you know, Visual Australia, happy to support individuals advocating to Uber. I'm very happy to use a couple of case studies to say, look, this is the examples what we're talking about, where, you know, people have experienced this, and certainly Uber Pet is the common debate that you have. It's to say that, oh no, that's a, you know, you need to order Uber Pet, and you say, no, actually, this is a assistance dog, and some people get it relatively quickly. And some people don't get it at all, and we all know what happens there.
Yep. Thanks, Chris. Okay, next one, Erica.
Next person is Deborah Simons.
Welcome, Deborah.
Hi. I'm interested to know why you use the term dog refusal a couple of times and you're not making reference to client refusal, because from my point of view, if I book a taxi or any other vehicle, it's my relationship with that company. My dog doesn't book it. My dog is my mobility aid. But we seem to be picking up the language of the driver, I won't take a dog. And I think that devalues the impact on the experience on us.
It's a really interesting issue, really interesting thought. I need to think about that, because I mean the reason why they're refusing you as a person is because of your dog. They're not if you didn't have the dog, they wouldn't be refusing you in this case because of that, and that's why I think that it becomes around commonly known from us as dog refusals. But the impact is 100%. Now, the dog doesn't care whether they go to wherever or not.
The dog doesn't book, the dog doesn't pay. Yeah. The dog doesn't ask for the service. It's between me and the organisation. They're refusing me, and I'm the one that's impacted. And as long as we keep saying it's about the dog, then we devalue that event.
I think certainly in our correspondence to them and to others, where we do see an access issue caused by a dog for a dog refusal, the focus is not about it's certainly from when we're doing this correspondence, it's certainly not about that you've refused the dog. It's about the impact to people, because the reason why you refuse this person because of their dog. So I think that whilst I'm probably saying this in general discussion, in our correspondence, it's all about the impact on the person, because we know that's the thing that is important, and that's the thing that the Disability Discrimination Act also covers. It's not about the refusal of the dog. The Discrimination Act is about the refusal of the person because they have an assistance animal.
Yeah. Thanks, next, Deborah.
Next, great. We have Ashley.
Okay. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi, Ashley.
It's not COVID. So just a couple of points. Obviously, and I'm going to be a little bit controversial and boat rocking here, but I'm over it. So I think, obviously, I'm not saying we're all doing a good job at dealing with this issue, organizations and individuals, and we're all doing the best we can. We're all trying to be work collaboratively with Uber, majority of us have been willing to do that. But I think it's getting to the point with a lot of situations now where the nicely approach is getting a bit old. But the problem is that we're stuck with, that's what we're stuck with. We can't, go and, ambush Uber headquarters or something. But, I think that it's getting to the point, I think, where enough is enough. Because, as I said on social media today, as individuals, we are so powerless. And I just want to give a couple of thoughts. Firstly, Uber Pet is just, if they could just completely scrap Uber Pet, our lives would be totally different. If one more person tells me to get Uber Pet, or even worse, you get in the car and they argue, but they get in, then they do the, I'll take you this time, but no other driver would. I'm going to do it because I'm doing a good turn and taking you because I'm such a kind driver, but don't expect anyone else to be as kind as me type attitude. The other thing is with the I agree with you regarding the support line, because all they do when you ring that line, all they do is log a ticket, log the issue. And then you follow the same process. So as far as I'm concerned, I may as well do it through the app, because it took me about 10 minutes to convince, as you said, the very, very polite lady on the other end of the phone, when I was talking about being refused, she thought that they were refusing to take a package and started telling me the laws about taking packages. And it didn't include four-legged hairy packages. So, I think that Uber and also just agreeing, I have spoken to drivers regarding the notification, and because I said to a driver that I know, I said, oh yeah, he said, how are you going with the refusals? And I said, same, I said, oh, but these notifications. He said, oh, so that was about that, was it? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, it was when all the floods were on a couple of weeks ago and there was severe weather, we're supposed to get washed out here where I am. And he said, we're getting things all day, severe weather warnings, and then just normal, do you want to drive with Uber Eats? Make sure your passengers wear seatbelts, all those things. That when it comes up with one, he thought it was just a generic, just looked over, went, yeah, whatever, and closed it. And as some of us were saying on social media a couple of weeks ago, that's a worry in and of itself, because if the driver is driving us to keep looking down at their phone all the time to get these notifications, it's a bit of a, concern as well. But unfortunately though, I haven't noticed any difference with the with the program after opting in. I do have some cynical thoughts about the program, but I'll bite my tongue on those. But I just give that feedback that it's not. I read about all the time and I'm tired. I was actually said to someone tonight. I said, I think when I'm at the stage now, when I say no dogs, I just want to go, okay, whatever, because I just feel that we're not making any. We're working with them and they're happy to work with us, but we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. That's we are getting to a really critical phase. Look, it's 8:30, so there's a number of hands still up. Erica, is there?
Yeah, there is. There's okay. Fernanda, there's Chelsea, there's John.
Okay, if you would hold on to that, we'll put you on first, but really want to hear from Jane and Martin just about their work, because they've been doing comprehensive work as well, and then we can open it up and at least get a good block of time. But we'll put you three up first as soon as Jane and Martin have said a piece on behalf of BCA, if that's okay. So welcome, Jane and Martin, who wants to start.
Yes, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Great.
It's Jane Britt here. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having us to this forum. So certainly you'd have to say, just listening to the preceding comments by Chris and by a few of the members here tonight, that it's been quite reflective of our experiences too, and certainly the work that Vision Australia has been engaging with is quite parallel to our own. We've sort of also been doing work in each state and territory around the taxi subsidy ongoing. We are quite aware that, you know, there's needing to be ongoing advocacy to ensure they're extended in each place, and we're ensuring to advocate that they need to remain permanent. We know with the multi-purpose taxi program subsidy that it can be used with Uber in Victoria, and hopeful that that's going to extend to other states and territories. So at a high level, we are dealing with that at policy level and also talking to the companies that are involved. We do hold regular meetings with the various companies as well, so with Uber, with other rideshare, and with the various bodies that represent taxi companies, about TSS and also about handler and dog guide service refusals. We do advocate within policy submissions about these issues too. But probably the main bulk of our work in this area has been around supporting individuals with individual advocacy. So supporting members who have experienced that service refusal. And I guess at this point, I'll hand over to Martin, who has more directly been supporting our members with some of these experiences, to talk a bit about what we have been witnessing, especially around some of those things like the introduction with the Uber Pet, and around some of the ongoing reasoning that has been given for different refusals over time. So Martin, I will hand over to you.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Jane, and thank you for the invitation to be here. I've had enough of this too, because we're hearing more and more and more complaints. Today, I handled three. This week, I've handled four. Three of those complaints were people in the service assistance program. We are positive about this program and want to continue to be, but we want to say, because we're speaking on behalf of the community tonight, that at this stage, it's not making one jot of difference at all. And we must work with Vision Australia to tell Uber this sad story of how people are being affected. They are having their self-worth smashed. They are feeling that they are dispensable. As one person said to me, if a person of colour was refused, there'd be an Australian total outcry. But because it's a person with a dog, the companies want to talk about that rather than the person who has been rejected because of what? Because of the very guiding tool that they choose, and it's not a tool, I know, but let's face it, it is an aid. Your dog is an aid. It's your choice to be guided safely through this world. And truly, we've got to come to terms with the fact as to why it's happening. And the reason why it's happening, particularly with Uber, is because the people who drive for Uber think, this is my car and I will invite who and who not to invite into my car. I will make the choice, not Uber, not anyone. It's like they are deciding that their family members are certain people and I'm driving my private car, and if I don't like who you are or whether you've got a dog or not, you are out. You are out. It's clearly what's happening. It's more intense with Uber because people who drive are driving their private cars. We've got to come to terms with the problem here. And the problem is Uber's model. That's the problem. The model of being able to drive your private car and being able to say, well, I'm an app user. I don't actually drive for Uber. I just use an app. And Uber lets them say that. They say it to us. The same thing is said. They call, when they respond to us, they'll say the app users, not our drivers. They effectively detach themselves from that responsibility. The other thing is, and once again, I'm trying to be positive about the service assistance program, but it's dimming by the day because of what we're hearing. And that is what we're hearing from our community members who are being impacted one by one. So I'll keep trying to be positive. But what we're hearing is that the program which alerts a driver that you are traveling with a dog, the news is now spreading to other companies that, oh, well, if you don't alert us that you've got a dog, well, why should the driver carry you? And we know that that is unlawful thinking and actioning. It's not right that a driver expects to know that a dog is on board. But this program actually automatically makes that happen. It's a similar effect to the pets program. A similar effect is occurring. And I'm hearing many anecdotal reports that that is spreading, that attitude. And I want to work with Vision Australia. We want to work with Vision Australia, the team, the organisations, because this problem is getting more and more serious. And I'm very sorry to report, because of what I know, through what we're hearing, it is not, the program is not impacting upon the caseloads at all. It's still increasing. And I've explained why I believe that's happening. The other thing I want to talk about is the police reaction. We are dealing with Victoria Police to try and create a precedent to have them enforce the fines, enforce the law, instead of just saying, go and get a good solicitor, which we're hearing all the time. And once again, this goes back to what Paula said, and that is because they're concentrating on the dog, not the person. We're trying to say to the police and to Uber, you are impacting upon a human being that has feelings that you have impacted upon. And what we're saying is stop talking about the dog. Talk about the person. And until we get to that point, we're not going to have a major impact. I assure you, we're not going to have a major impact upon Uber in particular. Because if the drivers are informed that they're impacting upon a person and we center and focus upon that, they won't worry about telling us about how much extra vacuuming they feel they'll have to do. They'll worry about the person and how much they have impacted upon them. We must make them worry about that. The other thing I'll say is Uber, give us the raw data. Give us the raw data on what's really going on instead of us having to guess what's going on. If you're serious about it, you'll share the raw data and we can work on it, all of us together, on what the actuals are rather than what they're telling us they are. So we want them to share the raw data, de-identified, with the stakeholders, which includes ourselves and which includes Vision Australia and dog guide organisations. So I guess I wish I could have come tonight with good news, but I haven't got it because I'm hearing very impacted people. I dealt with three today, four this week. Three of them are on the service program, service assistance program. So there's something badly wrong. And, you know, while I don't want to get nasty as or not so nice, as Ashley said, I empathise with that view and I'm firming up my view. I wrote a very strong note to them today and I won't apologise for it because they need to hear it straight and strong. And they need to understand the impacts and concentrate on people, not the dog. So thank you. And I want to be positive about this program. And I send that message straight to Vision Australia, to Chris. We want to be. But the only way we can be is to realise at this point it is not working. And we've got to double down on making it work. And the only way we can do that is to be straight up front to Uber and tell them there's something very wrong in your palace. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Martin. I'm sure you've got very broad agreement and support. It's been coming through the chat as well. Really, really important to raise those issues. And so, look, the before I go to questions and more comments, which are welcome, just remind people this is being recorded, and DGHA will go through the recording and bring out all the issues raised and the fantastic information and comments from Chris and Jane and Martin. And look, and I'm sure we don't have to talk about it now, Jane, Martin and Chris, I think collaboration is power. And so we're really keen to work with both organisations to contribute to what really is seeming to be a huge campaign that has to happen now. So thanks a lot, Martin. That's really fired us up. And now we'll go over to questions and comments, and we'll start with the three that were already on the hands up. Thanks, Erica.
Kevin, can I interrupt and ask?
No, you can't interrupt.
I just want to ask everyone to put their microphones on mute. There's a bit of background noise coming through.
Yeah, thanks, Annette. Please.
So next up is Fernanda, who has had issues with 1-3 cabs.
Sorry. Hi. First off, I want to thank Martin because Martin has been my advocate, especially with the local police force near me. Unfortunately, I don't think what's going on with 1-3 cabs. But on the relation of Uber, my brother often uses my account and yesterday a fare was cancelled. So I've just got an email from Uber asking me, was it because of the service dog that my fare was cancelled? And unfortunately, it was because my brother just forgot to cancel it himself. So that's, I think, a positive that Uber has been checking if you're part of the SAP program, if the cancellation was because of the service dog. I don't know if I'm the unique person that got the email or I don't know. But I rarely catch Ubers for this reason anyway.
Thanks very much.
Next we have Chelsea.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Great. I'm in the same way as what Ash was saying about the Uber Pet thing, because obviously I've had occasions where I've gotten into an argument with people because I think that the dog's you know, my guide dog's a pet. And it's like, well, no, she's actually a working dog, assistance dog. So I think some terminology needs to change with that as well. Also, I have had occasions, not recently, but I have had occasions where some of the drivers actually get quite aggressive when they start arguing with you. And I'm just wondering whether there's a way that we can, you know, people can have some tools or some tips or, you know, because I'm pretty clear and I explain that, you know, that they're, you know, what they're doing is refusals illegal and all that sort of kind of thing. But sometimes it gets to the point where they get quite aggressive and you feel unsafe and you don't feel comfortable getting into that vehicle. Or they do say, yes, you're okay to get in the vehicle, but then they make you experience, you know, the most uncomfortable in the world. So I was just wanted to put that out there on my experience and whether we can start actually having some systemic advocacy is happening here, because it just sounds like everyone is still having the same issues. Thanks.
Thanks, Chelsea. That's really important. And hopefully you report that as well, you know, after that happens. But that's really dangerous and that just should not happen.
I would 100% think you should, you know, report something like that, because it is really important, as you say, that you feel safe and comfortable with a journey. You know, I think the comment around systemic advocacy, you know, I think that is what we're trying to do, is trying to change the system. Vision Australia and Seeing Eye Dogs are seeing still an unacceptable number of refusals, not only in Uber is like one thing that's actually in my view, trying to actually do something about trying to fix it, but in taxis, and taxis are certainly also trying to do some stuff to fix it, but because there's so many individuals involved, it's a really challenging issue, and still refusals to restaurants and issues with hotels and things, and what's so frustrating is that. The law is very clear. The law is very clear. The issue is that the understanding of that law amongst various parts of the community is very poor, and you know, sort of what Martin was saying is individuals are making their own decisions and beyond what the law says, and it is very frustrating. And I think that even if you feel unsafe, I would be reporting that to the regulator, depending which state you're in, because, the regulators are the people that also, look at how do we improve driver performance. We can't just rely on taxi companies and we can't just rely on rideshare companies only to fix this. If we're taking a full systemic issue, and that's why I said it's really important to report that to the regulators and as well. And but you know, if this was an easy issue, we wouldn't be seeing that 30 years later or 40 years later, but after sort of really going hard on these issues, still having some taxis being refusing us. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating that and the impact on people is very real.
Yeah,
and thanks, I know that personally on a more regular basis than I want to. Mm.
Yep.
One of the things with Uber is that there is very much an opt-in whether you go onto this program or not. It doesn't change, because this program doesn't change. Uber's responsibility to actually abide by the law. Whether you're in part of this program or not, they still have to abide by the law and take you. What they're trying to do is use it as to try and trigger some on-time education for those drivers. And clearly, it's still, despite good intention, it's still not working.
Yep. So it's still a very much a work in progress. Okay, thanks. Yes, Martin.
Please, Kevin.
Yep.
I think there's a desperate need here for all of us, all the organisations to work together as we are, but even more, much more, because of the desperate nature of this problem. Mm. It is critical that we work together, organise a campaign and get down to informing the public that this is serious. It's serious because it's impacting upon so many of us. And also the Uber model is, I think, having a huge role, because the Uber model of using your private car and regarding yourself as some kind of cowboy out there operating on your own, and you're not actually an Uber driver, you're just an app user, is intensifying this. We receive at least 12 complaints to one about Uber. So Uber's trying to do something about it, except change their model and their outlook about it's not an app user, it's our driver. If they're not going to change their model, they have to intensify in a very, very big way immediately, I say, because of the impacts that it's having, their deliberate actions to get serious with the drivers. And by the way, we're left to believe them. They're not actually showing the raw data. So, you know, they're telling us what they're doing. I'm sorry, I'm a bit cynical about an organisation that allows drivers so much freedom.
Yep, that's great, Martin. And certainly that's what we'll follow up with too, is let's get collaboration going and work on this. This is the premium issue for people who are blind or have low vision in our community at the moment. So let's see what we can do. That's great. I just want to go to John, who's had his hand up since the first session. So
thank you very much, Kevin. I'm sort of hesitant to sort of bring up some of my experiences, but the reason I am is because it will be happening to quite a number of people, and it has got to a very, very serious stage for me in the way that one taxi company has changed its requirements of drivers. And I want to give this example for the information of Chris and Martin, because what now for the largest taxi company in Australia, 1-3 cabs, I live in an area where it's not in a city. So it's out near Dandenong. So it's an outer suburban area. And so therefore it has a lesser number of taxis that are servicing the area. And mm-hmm. the taxi drivers that are near here are probably people who live in the general area and tend to work the local areas more often. Now, if a very high rate of people that are, you know, where they're people that are of non-English speaking cultures. And as a result, I can ring a taxi and it can elect. I've decided as a courtesy to tell the drivers before they come, you know, to have a look out for me because I have a seeing eye dog. And I think it's courteous, you know, not to sort of spring it on them if I can't see them when they arrive or whatever. I think it's good, fair enough to ask them to look for me. But the 1-3 cabs as a company has now decided that drivers are not forced to take a person with a seeing eye dog or an assistance animal. The driver can now refuse, and the only penalty that they get is half an hour off the air, so that for 30 minutes they can't take another radio booking from 1-3 cabs. The problem with that is that, for example, I'm needing to use about 6 taxis, 3 outgoing and 3 coming back every day, 6 to 8 taxis a day. And every time I need to ring, drivers become familiar with the fact that I've got a seeing eye dog and they've got this prejudice against carrying it, which means that my average waiting time for a taxi is now ballooning to well over an hour and a quarter. So I've had no option but to ring a taxi, well, 13 Cabs, which has got local base, but also I've had to use a taxi company which is from exactly the opposite side of Melbourne, and normally they're getting to me before the 13 Cabs, and they don't have the same like offer to the drivers that you can refuse the job and you won't be fined and you won't be retrained, which was what 13 Cabs used to do. You'll just be put off the air for half an hour. But I'm actually suffering, or I'm being penalised more than the driver, because, as I say, it's taken me over an hour and a quarter to get a taxi that will take me. And by then, I've missed medical appointments, I've missed meetings, I've missed all sorts of things that I have to be punctual with. The other issue is I then dealt with Uber because I am in despair now. I don't have any other options other than employing a driver, which who knows how much that would cost. But my only other option was to try and work with Uber. But again, I'm facing a technology company that they made an error with the email address they use for me, and they discovered that error in January, and they still haven't rectified it. So I'm being charged full fare, even though they've got the multi-purpose taxi card, and they're having to refund me half of the fare. And I just think it's a bit odd that they can't delete one email address and put in the correct one and make it work properly. And the other thing that happens for people who are vision impaired or who have any disability is that if the driver's got to look for you at like a shopping centre or at a hospital or any office building, when they get to the location, not to where the person is waiting, but to the location, it's starting to charge a waiting time, which I'm very, very against, because if people don't look through the email bill, they may not see that they're paying. Well, the other day I paid just on $5 because the driver was a little confused as to which way to go in a car park. And so he was like saying that he'd sort of got to the location, but he hadn't got to me. I couldn't see him, and the people that were walking past me couldn't see any car. And so I was hit with a $5 waiting fee when he wasn't even there. And that's been consistent on my bills, is that I'm getting $2, $3, $4, $5 extra, which means I'm effectively paying full price anyway on some trips. And the other issue that I haven't been aware of was, despite paying the fare that has been highlighted by Uber, they've now started, and I would have thought that, you know, like I'm paying higher prices in supermarkets or for energy and all that, but it's part of the overall bill. But they've also introduced, without saying anything to people, a temporary fuel surcharge. And I didn't think it was my job to pay the trip fare plus the fuel. I thought it was my job to pay for the fare, and that the owner would be paying for their own petrol, as well as their own brakes or their own new windscreen if it broke or something, not that I would be landed with the cost. And so both organisations are causing a great deal of, frustration. And, it's just, where I'm not able to even get an Uber in a shopping centre location because their GPS is showing that I'm waiting at a coffee lounge, which cars can't even get to, even though I'm directly underneath it in a car park area where there's lifts and front doors and things, but it's showing to the driver that I'm upstairs waiting in a coffee lounge, which actually closed down just before the lockdowns occurred.
Yeah, John, we're getting into a little bit
that's
too
all,
much detail.
But thank you so much.
Yep. No, that's great. Really important issues, and certainly those personal stories are a crucial part of any campaign that we're going to launch. So is there any other people who've had their hands up, Erica?
Yeah, there's 5 people that have their hands up. Before they get their opportunity to speak, I just want to summarise some of the chat for those people that aren't able to access the chat, and also for the recording. some of the comments were about Martin and how wonderful it was that he's recognised that it's a human problem and we are the people that are actually directly affected, and it's not a company and it's not a dog. It's the impact it has on the human that is really important. Another set of comments was on the lack of enforcement, whether it's fines off the air or even getting the police to recognise that, you know, a law has been broken. This is discrimination, and trying to get some sort of police action is extremely difficult because they think of it as a civil matter. People have talked about how the ongoing issues of this is creating PTSD and anxiety. A lot of people have been refused on nights when it's late at night, it's pouring with rain, they've had no other way of getting home. It's, you know, it's creating quite a bad issue in that term.
Over time, so finish, yeah, and then I'll check with the other people.
Look, it was, yeah, just basically saying that the doing it as individual advocacy and by a case-by-case basis isn't actually achieving the outcome that, you know, we as Australia-wide people need to, you know.
Yep,
systemic advocacy. To resolve the issue, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've still got Scott Erickson, Francois Jacobs, we've got Kirsten, we've got Nina, and we've got Ashley.
Yep. Okay. Look, we're over time, and in the interest of our guests who've given up their evening, happy to take more comments or questions for a few minutes. But please, if it's already been raised, don't raise it again. Just, yeah. Okay. Let's go from the top.
Hey, it's Nina. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. I'm sorry. I really want to say something. I'm from Travel Bores. Drivers are breaking the law. There is no more excuses, no more apologies, no more training, videos, discussions, initiatives, campaigns, tiptoeing. Is common sense until there's significant penalties in place and enforced that affect drivers and their livelihoods, nothing is going to change. And yeah, everything that's been said tonight, I'm sorry, we've heard that all before. Yeah. Handlers are sick of it. They're not going to put up with it anymore. And I think the time has come to up the ante, take it to human rights, and they need to take action.
Absolutely, Nina. Thank you very much. Okay, next.
Next would be Scott Erickson.
Thanks, Scott.
Yep. How are you going? That's pretty much what I was going to say. Look, it is a fact that the law is definitely being broken, but this, what's interesting is this is a worldwide problem. I remember a few months ago when I had issues with Uber, I, you know, obviously like everybody, a few others, I had a rant on social media, as you do, and I said, look, it's really frustrating. I got refused, and I've been refused, you know, many times with my dog, and you feel really worthless. You feel like, you know, you've had a great night out and you get refused. In my case, it was coming home, and you just think, wow, all this effort you go to. And I looked through the comments a few days later, and it was a worldwide problem. There were people that were from around the world, from the US, the UK, all sorts of places, that were basically saying, same problem here, they don't care. So, I mean, I think, yeah, we need to do a lot. But I also acknowledge that it's even more frustrating when you talk to, as we've all said, you talk to these lovely people and they sympathize with you about how, you know, frustrating it must be for you. I can only imagine. And it's like, well, no, you can't imagine because, you know, you're not the one experiencing it. So
yep.
I think, yeah, there's a lot more that can be done, but I think we're heading in the right direction with all the conversations tonight. So hopefully things will change, but
yep. Thanks, Scott. Yep. I think you're supporting Martin there. The model is dysfunctional, amongst all these other issues. So thanks very much for that. Okay, next, Erica.
Kirsten. I hope you can all hear me for a start.
Yep.
But I was even talking to this Uber driver I had this morning, and I'm a bit like John, even though I'm also part of the SAP program, as I've heard like about the notifications and sometimes they sort of just get lost in the ether. I also send my own message just as a courtesy to say, yes, I've got a dog, and quite often I'm waiting at a train station or somewhere, so I need someone to look for me. And he was actually saying, because I quite often get from train station to where I'm going, which is quite a short trip, and he's actually saying, look, I could do more of like your little trips, of which I might pay, you know, $12 to $15, and he goes, I could do about 6 to 8 of those in a day and make more money than I can do in some of these long ones. So I think it's not only that, but I question, you know, is it the style of trips that like we're taking? Like, is it that they don't want to take us because we're also doing short trips, not only, and we've got the dog, or what is it?
Yes, Kirsten, that's, as Martin said, we're not getting all the data. So
no,
we need to get that.
Yeah, and the driver, like, because I told him like what mine was, and I said, so how much would you get out of that? And he goes, oh, I get about $8, and this was about a $12 trip. And I said, okay, so if I was to take a $50 trip, how much would you get? And he goes, about $35, and if I was to drive you back the other way, I wouldn't get anything.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Kirsten. Erica?
Francois.
Oh, thank you. I think my initial question about where is the button in the app is so insignificant now, so please don't answer it. But really, our Facebook page is absolutely littered with harrowing tales of refusals, and mine is definitely not the worst, but I can tell you every time I'm nervous. I'm like, oh, this is going to happen again. I just can't. Can we just relax about it and not planning on being at the place half an hour before, just so you know you'll get there in time? But in short, the bottom-up approach doesn't work. It really doesn't. I mean, we're paying, Vision Australia is paying somebody to work at this. PCA is paying people to advocate on our behalf, and I see both as necessary. But I really think the law doesn't say enough in terms of consequence. If it's a top-down approach and say you get $2,000 fine, they will very quickly get in line. That's how I feel.
Great. Thank you. I'm sure many, many of us support that.
And the fine does vary greatly across states.
Yes, yeah. It does, Chris. Yeah. Okay, is there any more people on the line there, Erica?
Yeah. The chat's gone nuts. But
okay, well, we're going to only take one or two more and then we need to stop.
Basically, the chat comments are let's do more, let's advocate, and the other comments are along, it doesn't actually matter whether it's a short distance or a long distance, it still happens. So that's not really the issue, it's just the attitude. And we've got Ashley as our last question asker.
Ashley, you can, if you can be very quick, you've already
asked. Yes, I'll be, don't worry, I'll be
very. Thank you very much.
So the chat's just voiceover's just yabbering, yes, on here. It's the problem with chats. So just wanted to, I suppose, raise the impact. I know some people have stop it, voiceover. I know a few people have raised sort of around the edges, but I think that I don't know in our advocacy efforts whether something that we really, really need to look at as well is, obviously, as Martin was saying, it's the human impact, but it's not just to the point of feeling worthless or feeling crap, for want of a better word, about it. It's to the point in my situation, for example, and I'm not just talking Uber, I'm talking taxi and Uber and whatever company you want to use, to the point where I don't want to go out. I want to stay in my house because the anxiety of going out, the anxiety of that is too much. And I'm almost having a panic attack as the, you know, the time is ticking down, your car's 2 minutes away. And then, you know, it's just really, you know, it's impacting on my mental health as well, because I have to, you know, I'm more socially isolated than I already am. And what are they going to do about that when we've all, in counselling and receiving treatment for PTSD, you know, yeah. And the cost that we have from that. And just in final, I was going to say, I'm 100% with Annette. We say all this, we talk about, but what's the solution? You know,
exactly.
Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? How are we going to fix it? Because obviously what we're doing is not working. And as individuals, we are so powerless. Our law doesn't have teeth. Our discrimination law doesn't have teeth. We all know that. So I just don't know. I don't know. As I said on Facebook, I don't know where to go. I feel helpless as an individual. I just think it's all well and good to talk about how terrible it is, but we need to do something.
Thank you, Ashley. I think we're all in unison around that. Excuse me. Okay, we will have to wind up now. I want to first thank Chris Edwards very much for coming in and updating us on the Vision Australia collaboration with Uber and the more general information. And Martin Stewart, thanks a lot from BCA. You've really fired us up. You've got actual client stories. As I said, DDHA have recorded this. We will certainly compile it all. And we'd really love to collaborate with BCA and Vision Australia around developing a campaign. we're seeing here in the comments and online that there is actual now personal harm coming to people every day, and there's avoidance starting to happen because of an inaccessible and discriminatory environment. So we really do need to act. I think we've got the energy and the people to do that. The Royal Commission is still running. We can put submissions in till end of June. We have the DDA, although there is challenges with that, but it's still there. We have some tools that we could, and the more of us that get together and collaborate, the more powerful our message will be. But the system does have to change. As people have said, the bottom-up approach just is not working. So on that note, thank you all very much and for your time and for staying over time. Thank you.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website, www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?